This is SD Podcast. The development of health behavioral interventions, including those aimed at reducing the risk for STIs and HIV, are guided by social and behavioral science theory for maximal impact. Specifically, constructs from social psychological theories, such as the health belief model, the theory of reasoned action, and social cognitive theory, have been very popular during the past few decades to inform numerous interventions for HIV prevention. More recently, the role of the internet and social media has become increasingly important in the delivery of health and prevention messages. This is raising the question of whether we can simply translate the existing behavioral concepts to this new platform, or whether the new media requires us to reconsider existing theory and fundamentally change our view on how to develop behavioral interventions. On STD Podcast today, we discuss these questions with one of the leading experts in sexual health and the new media. Dr. Sheena Bull is a sociologist and a professor at the Colorado School of Public Health, where she currently heads the Department of Community and Behavioral Health. Dr. Bull was among the very first to examine the role of the internet in finding sex partners on the internet and was a co-author on a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association back in 2000 that set in motion an entire field of study on the interface between sexual health and the internet. She just published an editorial in the journal Sexually Transmitted Diseases entitled Sexually Transmitted Disease Prevention Campaigns in the 21st Century, New Frontiers in Social Media. Welcome to the podcast, Sheena.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So as an example of a new frontier in STD campaigns, you discussed the CDC's Get Yourself Tested campaign. We should mention that a paper on this campaign also appears in this month's journal. What's this campaign all about, and how does it differ from more traditional campaigns?
So, as this is described in the article in the journal this month, the GYTnow.org campaign, or Get Yourself Tested, is really a website, and what the campaign did was to use television, web, print, and short message service, or SMS, text messages, combined with on-the-ground efforts to get young people aware of testing and to link them to testing. The other thing that they did was have an SMS locator tool, so young people could text findstdtest.org and get information about where the nearest free or low-cost teen-friendly STD testing services were located in their area. So they also had national promotions and celebrity endorsements, all of which was intended to drive people to the website, which would then in turn get them access to services for testing for STI.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a number of ways that this campaign effectively used the new media, but you also suggested in your editorial that there may be other things that the campaign could have done that could have increased its impact.
Right. So, a lot of the things that the campaign did were great efforts and really combining on-the-ground efforts with social media is something that they should be commended for, because a lot of times people think about using social media instead of face-to-face efforts. And really, if we think about the way we use social media, a lot of it is really to enhance our in-person relationships or the things that we know about already. So they did that very well. The thing that I found interesting is to think about whether or not using all of these different channels for the same purpose to drive people to a website is really the best use of those social media channels. They had efforts on Twitter, they had efforts on Facebook, for example, and those are different types of social media. So if you think about Twitter, that could have been used in a way that I think might be engaged to get people information that's useful, but also to change norms and attitudes. Same thing with Facebook. You could think about using it to identify popular opinion leaders or other people who might drive people to a website, but also change norms and attitudes. So the idea about social media is to think about not just one goal of getting people to a website, but really to think about the opportunity we have to change norms, and to really get social networks to engage with each other to do that.
Right. So are there certain examples that come to mind here of how maybe other campaigns have used these social media in a different way, or maybe in a more effective way?
Well, it's interesting because the question about whether or not health communication campaigns have used social media in a different way, I think we're still in a very nascent period for health communication campaigns in particular. There's several interventions that we know that have been done to try and change behaviors using Twitter, using Facebook, and using other forms of social media like text messaging. And those range from interventions around physical activity, nutrition, smoking cessation, as well as prevention of STI. But a communication campaign may be slightly different, and we're moving from the, you know, kind of traditional put up billboards in different markets or have TV commercials to the opportunity to use social media. The question then becomes, are those methods effective? I don't think we really have a lot of information. This is one of the first campaigns we've actually seen.
Right, because at least in theory, these large campaigns traditionally are kind of a one-way street. I mean, you see a billboard or you see a TV ad, and with the social media, you actually create much more of an interactive environment, which might be conducive to better messaging. Is that what you're sort of alluding to?
I think so, and I think that's it precisely, is that the unidirectional approach traditionally in health communication was necessitated by the medium. Like, you could only put an ad in a TV commercial or on a billboard. But now, as you say, there's the possibility for people to interact using social media. Mm-hmm. So there is the way, an opportunity there to maybe build on messages, to really think about first starting with changing norms and attitudes and building on skills, and then moving to other approaches that can get people to act on testing.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your editorial, this is getting back to what we were saying in the beginning of this interview, you also challenge the adequacy of traditional behavioral theories to guide interventions that use the internet and social media. In fact, you say that they are necessary but insufficient in modern campaigns. So how do you suggest we expand this theoretical framework?
So the interesting thing is the great potential that we have to use social media to reach a lot of people also becomes one of our biggest challenges. Because essentially, if you think about how many messages you might get on a daily basis through text or through a social media outlet like Facebook or Instagram or some of the other popular sites, part of what now becomes necessary is making your message stand out. And before, a lot of our health campaign and health promotion interventions have happened in real world settings. So you've got them in the school, or you've got them in a club, or you've got them in a group setting, for example. Those are some of the most popular ways to deliver health promotion. But now we don't have that forced opportunity or forced situation where people will be able to be captive as your audience. So what I think we need to do, in addition to behavioral science and behavior theory, is to really think about health communication theory that can be brought in here, thinking about how to frame messages so that they will be compelling and engaging. And there is quite a lot from health communication theory in traditional campaigns that can be brought to bear in developing campaigns for social media. But the other new frontier completely for social media is really this context in which the messages happen. In the context of, you know, having access to tons of other information, having competition with all of the other resources that want your attention, makes it difficult for us. And so I think there's a role for theory to understand how to get people's attention and how to maintain it. Some things are useful, like social network analysis, to try and understand how information spreads within a network. and whether or not that can be utilized to identify key opinion leaders, if you will. If you take the traditional diffusion of innovations theory and the idea that there are popular opinion leaders who can influence behavior within social media, maybe we could use social network analysis more effectively to identify who those people might be and work with them to share our messages rather than have the messages come from the CDC or some other educational group, but really more like a trusted friend or a role model.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying basically that we have a great potential in reaching an enormous amount of people through these media, through these social networking media, but at the same time there's a huge amount of competition basically going on, and we have to figure out how do we stand out in this competition.
Right.
There's actually, you mentioned some writings that have happened about the development of messages that go viral or that have a certain stickiness to them so that they actually really do get people's attention. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. So this I mentioned in the editorial. Jonah Berger from the Wharton School and University of Pennsylvania wrote a book last year called Contagious, Why Things Catch On. And it really is a study of why products and behaviors catch on via social media and go viral. So he had some very intriguing things to say in there about what things do make a message more engaging and what will make someone share a message, which I think is really this untapped potential for us, that we can really rely on social networks to spread our messages for us. But really, messages have to be crafted in such a way to really generate that intent to spread it along. And so some of those things are messages that can be very emotional, that really trigger an emotional response. And if you think about it, you scroll down on news items, for example, and see which ones generate the most comment. They're ones usually that create a response of anger or frustration, or a response of, you know, deep love or something, you know, where people really are fundamentally moved. Mm-hmm. So messages that are emotional are important. Messages that help people learn. So, you know, coming back to some basic information that's useful for people can be another guiding principle. And then messages that are logical and make the sender look good, you know, help generate the sender's social capital, if you will, because then they can present themselves as an expert or someone who has some useful information to share with their friends.
Back to the Get Yourself Tested campaign. So let's look a little bit at the results of that campaign. Can you say something about that and how it was evaluated?
So the campaign itself was evaluated in a couple of ways. The most important thing I think to take away from the results is that we're not able to say that directly that exposure to the campaign led to increases in testing per se. We'd have to have a more rigorous study design to be able to do that. But again, I think the designers of the campaign should be commended because they were able to do some level of analyses where they were able to show an increase in STD testing during the time when the campaign was running. And then they also were able to do analyses showing trend data that testing was actually higher during the campaign period compared to other periods in the year. So there does seem to be some suggestion that there's an association between being exposed to the campaign and increases in testing. One thing we're not able to understand is that because of the on-the-ground events, is it because of the social media events, or the combination of all of those things together?
You cannot really tear it apart.
Right.
Yeah, okay, right. Now, to be honest, and is that in large media campaigns are really notoriously difficult to evaluate. Exposure is difficult or impossible to control, and therefore traditional randomized control designs are pretty much out of the question. You also say that such studies like randomized control trials take a long time to complete, and that the internet and social media environment changes so quickly that by the time your study is complete after 5 or 7 years or something like that, they're not only complete but they're also obsolete. So what kind of alternatives do you think exist?
So I think the challenge here, and I will say I wanted to commend the GYT team because they really, they took their best guess and best practices about all of the social media that's out there. And this is a team that has substantial experience in developing and working in social media. So I think they did essentially the best they can with what information we have now. But to your point about randomized controlled trials, they take so long. The other options that I think are out there are perhaps, well, one thing that's out there, I think, is the opportunity for us to do randomized controlled trials more efficiently and more quickly. So it is possible to think about having a little bit more control before a full-scale campaign is out there, but we just have to be more flexible and agile in terms of doing campaigns more quickly. So it seems to me that opportunities, we've got lots of tools now to collect data on the internet, to deliver media on the internet. So why not have a registry, if you will, of people who are at the ready, who may be at risk for STI, young people in particular, who could be exposed to campaign materials and who could quickly complete a randomized controlled trial in a short period of time. But in order to have that happen, you have to have them in place and ready to go,
right,
available to test multiple media. The way that there are panels online that are available for people to enroll in multiple trials. Another possibility is if you have enough data from people participating in shorter, more efficient randomized controlled trials over time, you could create a bank of data that could then be used for observational studies. So essentially people who have reviewed GYT type of materials and then maybe have reviewed three or four other campaigns, their data are stored, and then when the subsequent campaign comes up, they can be a comparison group. Now, of course, they're not randomized, and so there's biases that are inherent in that process. But there are ways like propensity scoring and other tools that you can use methodologically to address those biases. It would help us to at least get a larger evidence base about what is promising, mm-hmm, and then be more selective about what we need to carefully study in a more controlled trial.
Well, Sheena, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you. It was good to be here.
Dr. Bull is a sociology professor and the head of the Department of Community and Behavioral Science at the Colorado School of Public Health. Her paper is entitled Sexually Transmitted Disease Prevention Campaigns in the 21st Century, New Frontiers in Social Media. This open access paper is available at the website of the journal Sexually Transmitted Diseases at www.scdjournal.com. SD Podcast is produced by Ben Westergaard for the Internet and SD Center of Excellence. This is Case Riedmeyer for SD Prevention Online.